This is a copy of a talk to members given by Mr. Geoffrey Hodson at Arewa on Saturday, March 28, 1964. Mr. Hodson speaks on thoughts on teaching theosophy. He was introduced by Mrs. Elsie Wilson.
Mrs. Wilson and friends, I'd like to express my happiness at having been invited and finding myself here to participate in studies of what for me is the most important thing in life, namely the popularization of theosophy. I've decided to suggest some general subjects concerning this procedure, chiefly as they affect the lodge. Then I'm going on to talk about the work of teaching theosophy under a title, Thoughts on Teaching Theosophy. This procedure, of course, must harmonize with the general plan of lodge work and be so arranged as to fit harmoniously into the whole scheme of lodge activity and section activity. Thinking about this in general, I find that there are apparently 8 main aspects to be considered. And I'll touch on them briefly before going on to my subject. First, I put speakers. And this immediately raises the question of whether we should restrict our platform to lectures and lecturers on theosophy itself and its applications to the great problems of human life, personal and for the race as a whole. Or are we going to invite onto our platform speakers from other movements and on quite other topics, some of which may not obviously be related to theosophy? If this latter course is followed, then the chairman has a splendid opportunity and even a responsibility. For it is the chairman's duty, I conceive, after a visiting lecturer has spoken, to relate the main ideas to theosophy as far as possible. Internationalism, world brotherhood, world peace, the illumination of the darkened human mind, UNO, and all the other brotherhood organizations in the world, to relate whatever has been spoken about directly to theosophy itself and the TS, so that members of the public attending, and perhaps some of them coming to hear about theosophy, won't go away disappointed. This happens. People come in to hear a lecture on theosophy and find out what it really is and how it can help them, find they're going to have a movie of some foreign country or a lecture upon some subject which is not easily related to the ageless wisdom. Therefore, the chairman should do his or her best to link the speaker's remarks up with theosophy. Then there next comes the possibility of the training of workers who desire it rather than letting them just get elected into some office or other, but really to have in the lodge some kind of regular instruction. And this could apply to new members who might want to get to know about lodge work and be provided with an opportunity of service. A sure way of happiness. Here, of course, the more experienced members would make themselves available. And I rather favour something in a freely organised system of training for workers and new members, so that a certain professional perfection may be approached. Then there are the members' meetings themselves. Rather a problem very often. I find in many lodges throughout the world that the officials find to their regret that the members don't readily come to a members' meeting. And of course the reason is that they don't find them sufficiently interesting to justify turning out, especially on cold nights or after business. So the keynote there, if we want good attendance at our members' meeting, is interest. Make them interesting, make them vital, people will come. Now, orienting new members is important. You know, people can join the society, and they do. And nobody talks to them, nobody takes any interest to them, and one hears of members who, after 1 or even 2 years, who have been attending, well, without anybody taking very much notice of them. That is an important aspect of lodge work which requires attention. And again, guidance offered without unduly intruding upon them by the more experienced members. In some countries, particularly in America, they have what they call workshops for all this. They have weekends and even weeks, attendance of which is made easy by the provision perhaps of accommodation and even part of the fairs to gather the more serious members together to study how all this may best and most effectively be done. And here, of course, we are very fortunate in New Zealand to have Oriwa, where we can all come, like we are here this morning, in beautiful surroundings, to consider our work and to make our Theosophical Society, our section and our lodges more effective in popularizing a knowledge of Theosophy. Again, it's very interesting in America, you know, where they go in for these study weekends and have organized camps. They have a farm they bought on the border of Connecticut and New York called Pumpkin Hollow. Pumpkin Hollow. And there they can accommodate up to 100 people and have cabins, complete cabins, and units somewhat like here, which can be rented. They have a swimming pool and they haven't got a glorious beach. They're right in the country of New England. There regularly they hold these meetings through the summer weather. Then of course there's Orcas Island in the northwest, in the Pacific, in Puget Sound, off Seattle, a very highly developed camp there, which has been going now for 20 years at least, and has reached an extremely high standard of accommodation, speakers, arrangements, and of course on an island in the midst of a most beautiful part of the Pacific. That brings us to public presentations, and I'm going to talk about that in a few minutes, so I won't pause here. Now, public relations. I think we fail rather in our work in establishing a good relationship with the public and with public institutions. Now, with what we have to offer, the one great light in the world, the universal wisdom, that which enables one to make sense of life, and without which life cannot possibly make sense, we have it to offer. But For some reason or other, public institutions don't use us. Public librarians don't send people to us for our specialised books as often as they might and as much as they might. The press, too, and even the education department. Somehow or other, we have lost personal close contact with these and other civic, local and national institutions. They should be cultivated so that we have a place in the community, being respected as useful citizens and drawn upon on occasion. We have so much to offer. With regard to advertising, it is very useful always if you can cultivate a personal relationship with someone who works on the staff of the newspaper, and particularly upon the reporters and editorial staff. I find when I visit lodges throughout the world, if there is a member or a friend of a member who is on those staffs, then we get very special treatment. And the same applies to television and also to the radio. Cultivate a friendship with people on the staff of those institutions and have, as it were, special opportunities for using them for our work and helping them in theirs. Free distribution of free literature. This varies. As I travel about, I can't help noticing it. In some lodges, it's very untidy, the free literature. It gets dog's-eared and dirty through handling, and it's not very well arranged. I don't know how it is here, so I can say this without aiming obliquely at anybody present. Though if the cap fits, friends, please wear it. All such displays want to be orderly and neat and kept up, gone over, so that fresh-looking, attractive, free literature on our work and our society and our teachings is there ready near the door for everybody easily to obtain. And yes, the thought occurs to me also on notices. The notice boards want to be kept neat and tidy and not dog's-eared or little crooked or getting shabby. Whether it's outside the large building or inside for members or for the public, everything neat, tidy, orderly, business-like. These things may perhaps not be regarded by the philosopher as of much importance, but if we want to popularize a knowledge of theosophy, we must meet seekers more than halfway, and this kind of good business is one of our ways. Personal relationships with the public. There we can't and must not intrude upon people whom we see regularly attending our lectures. But someone ought to keep an eye open and go up and in a quiet way, chat, and gradually offer, is there anything I can do for you? Would you like help in selecting books? And find out their point of interest and show interest and even concern in them and appreciation of their attendance. These can be lacking in lodges, you know, and we can get the name, in fact we have the name, of being rather cold and indifferent. We must be warm and deeply concerned. One never knows who has come in there seeking light. Some are on the threshold of despairing conduct. I know of cases of people who have come deciding they're going to commit suicide if they are not illumined that there and then. Others are potential workers and leaders. Others in the ordinary way of life are open to the wonderful light and wisdom which is theosophy. We mustn't intrude, but we show interest, show concern. Just as if there were guests into our home, wouldn't it be? Something like that. I believe that reading lists or study courses for both the public and more especially for new members are important, reading lists. So they could go into the library or the book depot, most important parts of Lodge work, and be guided in the books to choose and the order in which they should be read. That avoids the danger of somebody getting a too advanced work at the beginning and being put off by its abstruseness or the somewhat strange and even eccentric views which are offered, which we understand and fit into their place, but new members may not. Care in advising seekers for books. The librarian has a wonderful opportunity there. Perhaps the librarian is the most important official in the lodge. They're there most of the time. And see people drift in, come in. They're seeking. They want to know that they're on the threshold, perhaps, of illumination. Or, as I say, they're in trouble. And they want light, guidance, in these days of doubt and difficulty. Now, the librarian, I know we're all voluntary and it's wonderful for anybody to be there, but the librarian does well to acquaint themselves with the book and with the ability to realize what will most help each inquirer. Now, I think you will best be helped by such and such a work, a textbook of theosophy, or, if it's entirely a newcomer, an outline of theosophy. Somebody with a scientific mind, first principles of theosophy. And be ready and know. If this isn't done, friends, then there's a danger of a person getting a too advanced book at first and turning right away from theosophy. Then last amongst these general ideas, the necessary interest in and provision for youth, young people. HPB Lodge does quite well, I think, if I may presume to say so, in this aspect of the work, which should be developed. The round table makes a splendid introduction, and then those children who go on and become knights and then go on into later adolescence and adult life, that least have had a grounding. They want watching. Now there is a period in their lives which needs bridging, a gap between the more devotional and domestic relationship of the round table with its idealism of chivalry and kindness and service. There's a gap between that which is for the young and the teenager who's gone out in life and can't find a place in the new life with adults and other teenagers and all that interests and attracts so vividly from the outer world. There's a gap there which wants to be bridged. And then special meetings for you. Care for them, interest in them, which they can feel. Such fellow members are some of the ideas which have gradually developed in my mind as I have watched lodge work going on in different parts of the world. Now the subject which I offer to speak on, which really is to share with you some of the thoughts which have arisen in my mind as I go about the world teaching theosophy. I'm very conscious of my own deficiencies in this matter, and all the time I'm speaking of ideals, I'm remembering them and speaking to myself. And I don't want to state too high an ideal so that someone aspiring might be put off and say, oh, I could never get as far as that. Please don't. I'm deliberately stating the ideal. Very well then, let's suppose, shall we, that the opportunity of lecturing on theosophy is coming our way. what's going to happen inside us, to us, and to those who listen to us. Well, first of all, the realization that, in my personal view at any rate, this is the most important office and task open to any human being in any nation and any part of the world. Oh, I know that's sweeping, but it's said deliberately. There is no higher calling, friends, than to spread abroad the light of the ageless wisdom with its wonderful teachings, which tell us what we really are: divine spiritual beings here on earth, why we are here, in order to evolve and bring the germinal Christ in us to full perfection as the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. And by the by, learn the religion of the country. And I just quoted from Christian Bible then, but in other places like Buddhist countries or Hindu countries, one naturally quotes the same thing from their scriptures, and it's well to link them up. So why we are here? To bring out the innate divinity from its germinal to its fully flowered condition. How is that going to be brought about? By the experiences of life and our response to them. None being wasted. Drive that home. None being wasted. Everything that happens to us, whether it seems successful or not, is playing its educative and enlightening part upon us all the time, drawing out our qualities. How is this experience gained? Well, by means of successive lives on earth. If you say, I can't possibly reach the measure of the stature of fullness of Christ, I'm already 30 or 40, that's where I am, a little past. And by a little later on I should be gone, failed. And the reply, of course, of Theosophy, of course you won't fail, you can't fail. For it is God that worketh in you, and life gives you a succession of lives here on earth. How wonderful for you. You've ample time, ample opportunity, no hurry. And eventually you will arrive. Yes, but what about all injustices of life? There aren't any. The whole procedure, teaches Theosophy, is carried on under the operation of the law of cause and effect. How wonderful. Action and reaction, cause and effect, sowing and reaping, quote from the scriptures of the world which have this doctrine in them. And so you open up to the seeking and open human mind a wonderful philosophy of life, which is unassailable in its logic and full of inspiration and hope, and drives away despair. Now, what a gift to give to the human race. And that's why I say there's no higher calling. None. Either that, or collaboration in bringing it about. Through life, through literature, and through lectures. Extremely important, and remember that every great spiritual teacher, every great disciple of such, and every great philosopher outstanding who has visited this world has done nothing else but go about teaching theosophy. Obviously it's the highest calling there is. Now, I mentioned this at the beginning because if you can get that realization into your heart and mind, very well then, you've got the inner purpose burning in you, which will carry you over the many difficulties of preparing and delivering lectures effectively. So also one needs, I think, to have the conviction that theosophy is true. Now, I find this a tremendous comfort. In one of the letters from the Masters of the Wisdom, there is the sentence. Our doctrines being true. I rest on that. That is to say, we are teaching the truth. We are safe. We're in an unassailable position. The Master said, what we have to teach is truth. Now, to get this into your blood and nerves and brain, then you're not hesitant any longer. You're not afraid, you're not half-hearted, you're not doubtful. Here it is, and the Master says, it's true. Now, that conviction of your own will convey itself to the audience and go a long way to supplement your words. Then another conviction, that theosophy is the only panacea for this world's ills. There isn't any other. There isn't any other. It's the only one. Examine it, take it to pieces, see its application to life, look at others and compare them. And you will find that only when the others are teaching theosophy and contain the ageless wisdom are they panaceas. Whereas in theosophy you have, I think, the only panacea available for this world ill, so needed today when humanity harbors a dangerous sickness. Its mind is darkened, hence the mess and chaos in the world. It is seeking light, but not finding it is humanity. There is no stable peace of mind for mankind, no harmony among the nations which is utterly secure and enduring, no unity of all humanity, but a series of nations led by individuals who have expressed the determination to conquer, overcome, and bury the rest of humanity. And with the weapons to do it, born of nuclear fusion and nuclear fission and the hydrogen bomb, bacteriological warfare, and these hang over the head of humanity like a sword of Damocles. No wonder people are frightened or cynical and say, let us eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Religion doesn't help them, not really, not for the reasoning mind. Helps the heart wonderfully. Theosophy meets both needs, and therefore I think it's good to become convinced that humanity needs theosophy very greatly indeed. Next, compassion is the ideal motive. I think so. As I speak to you about myself, describing myself and all mankind and the condition the human race is in, one is moved deeply, isn't one? One sees the sorrows, the sickness, the accidents, so-called and miscalled, the crashes, the deaths, the larger and larger hospitals, asylums and prisons. One is moved deeply, isn't one, with compassion for humanity. Another motive. Very well then, get out and get on and heal their wounds and show them the way to light. Out of this compassion, it seems to me, arises the great call, teach theosophy to mankind. Or popularize a knowledge of theosophy, as the Master also wrote. We have to popularize a knowledge of theosophy. For me, popularize doesn't mean cheapen, but rather lucidly expound, so that he who runs may read and understand. Next thought. Let us try to give not words only in our lectures, not ideas only, but something more, an inward serenity and peace, and on occasion power and wisdom, and consoling, heartening influences, so that the audience isn't only instructed, but goes away with a new light and a new life and a new fire, perhaps. It can be done. However far behind, we can effectively follow the example of the great. Very well, those are introductory remarks. Now, we're on the platform. What next? Well, I think the first words are very important, indicative of the approach to the audience and the relationship felt towards them. I think, for example, it's very good to bring in the pronoun we. And the other word, our. For example, you could say, not you have all come here this evening to listen to. There you're divided now. You've got your lecture up here and your people down there, and there they are. Is it not nicer to say, friends, our subject for this evening can hardly fail to be of deep interest to every thoughtful person. Now you're with them and they're with you. All of us, for example, have felt the need for some knowledge concerning the conditions, shall we say, of our loved ones after death. We would like to know also the conditions which await us when our time comes, as most surely one day it must. Now what have you done? You're off the platform, you're down there amongst the audience, in with them, thinking with them, feeling with them, searching with them to find what theosophy has to say. Curious how the mind works. A picture just entered my mind then. Memory of an experience. I was being driven through the great orange growing area in central Florida 2 or 3 years ago, and beside the road there were booths like there are here, selling fruit direct from the growers to motorists and others, and there was a huge notice up on one which had the writing in big capital letters hadn't been quite correctly spaced. And the first two words, as they should have been, were very large and the rest not easy to read. And they were W-E-S-H-I-P. Oh, I thought, wonderful. Weeship. What a lovely idea. Weeship. I adopted that word. I love it. I still hold on to it. Yeah. Us and we. We ship. Of course, what it went on to say was, we ship oranges to any part of the world. Of course, that's a form of we ship too, but. Next, I'm not going to talk about the actual work of lecturing and speaking. That you can get courses on public speaking quite readily. And I'm rather talking a little more personally about the work. I do recommend all who find this wonderful opportunity opening before them of teaching theosophy, the greatest in the world, remember, I do recommend them to go and take a course in public speaking from some accredited teacher, and if you can afford it, personally, not in a class, and get diagnosed so that faults of pronunciation, of diction, of manner and mannerisms can be known from the beginning and are thereby not perpetuated into habits, then hear yourself on tape or record. Very valuable experience, if sometimes rather disheartening, but so good. Telling how the voice sounds to others, how clearly one can be heard, how good our pronunciation of this glorious English language is, how our vile vowels are, you know, and so on. So that since we are doing a spiritual work for humanity, it's done in the best possible, most beautiful and perfect way within our limitations, and will therefore produce a good effect upon the minds of those, and ears, and cultural standards of those who listen. Important, friend, very important. It's wrong, of course, but the ageless wisdom presented badly could be dismissed by someone needing it if the manner of speech, presentation, organization and chairmanship are all below a reasonable standard. Take lessons, I would suggest. Then develop a subjective life and the ability to retire into an inner silence and do so. Then the inner self can reach you and inspire you and drop ideas into your mind. Sometimes even when you're lecturing, you have a pause perhaps. A good idea to develop pauses. Let's the audience think over what's been said, and the ego and your own mind just add something to what is being said. A memory or a new idea, maybe. Ideas can then reach you. And after each lecture, go over the notes and the memory of the address and seek improvements and write them into your notes. Look at my notes. They're written on all over. Imperfect though they were, the beginning and still are. Nevertheless, that's how I build them. Then when there is enough writing, read time. When you do this, teachings gradually become experienced truth, in addition to valuable, intellectually conceived ideas. You're talking from within yourself about something you're convinced about. You've experienced. People then know that you know what you're talking about. And believe me, friends, that's a tremendous asset to anyone who's teaching on any subject whatever. Scientific, philosophy, religious, or any other subject. If the person knows what they're talking about, makes all the difference. Remember the story? You've heard me tell it sometimes. Our class was in public speaking, was being trained by a professor in a university, and as an illustration of good speech, he took the shepherd's psalm and read it to them. The Lord is my shepherd, and I shall not want, and so on in all its beauty. He read it beautifully, diction perfect. Everything right. Nobody was moved. Oh, they appreciated the language, I suppose, and didn't touch them. There happened to be a clergyman present, and the professor, I think realizing that it had all gone rather flat, said, would you mind reading the Shepherd's Psalm for him? And so he said, I won't only read it, I'll repeat it by heart. And he did so, and when he'd finished, there wasn't a dry eye there. They were all so deeply moved. So when the class was over, one of the students went to the professor, and he said, what happened then? Your reading was quite perfect, but it somehow didn't reach us. And yet this clergyman here moved us deeply. Why was it? Something I want to know. Well, he said, I was reading the Shepherd's Psalm, and I do know about the shepherd, but our friend here knows the shepherd. All the difference in the world. Interior experience. Or, to put it a little colloquially, to know what you're talking about. Conviction is then conveyed to the audience, and complete sincerity is sensed and appreciated. That also is a very important factor, I think, in successfully teaching anything. Complete sincerity. Then we may do well to speak from deep within ourselves, as well as from acquired knowledge. Meditation, for example, on the idea of oneness with God, and through him with all that live. Coming to an experience of kinship with divine life in all nature, and by meditation to have had a touch of only one, to have felt the mystic identity, as it's called. Thereafter, you can readily feel at one with others, and they with you. And they feel that also. And it helps in exposition. Then, know the subject well. Success in teaching theosophy, I think, depends upon an overall grasp of the doctrines and their interrelationships. So, study, take the doctrine to pieces, put it together in your own words. Very useful. I learned that lesson also with great humiliation. My very first public lecture. All unprepared, unready, untrained, not knowing one thing about all this. Miss Clara Codd was to lecture on the life after death in Manchester. She went down with the flu, and they called upon me to take her place. Well, I felt this may be a call from the Master. I mustn't fail to respond, but I was unprepared. So I merely went through the theosophical books on the subject, took out paragraphs, arranged them in consecutive order, and read them, with perhaps some comment. Probably it was all right from that point of view, but I didn't know the shepherd, you see. I knew about the shepherd, but I didn't know the shepherd. Didn't know my subject, personally. Well, there was a rationalist present, I remember. One of these very valuable people who approach everything through the ratiocinating mind and tear everything to pieces that they can, demanding an unassailable logic. Well, I hadn't it. And so there I was, bombarded with questions which tore to pieces all I'd said. And I went home a very saddened and humiliated person. I'd let the work down, I'd let the Master's teaching down, and I had probably failed to bring any help to the bereaved people. So I made a decision then, friends, if I may continue to be personal, that I would never go on the platform again until I had thought of the objection, all I could conceive, to every doctrine. And then work and search and ask until I knew the answer. And I took the doctrines to pieces, a watchmaker takes a watch. And I've still to learn at it, and am far from perfect about it. It's helped me, because I put the watch of theosophy together again. And in general, I find that most people have the same kind of queries that arise in my mind. And one is partly ready, at any rate, to answer. Now, one or two more remarks. Watch very carefully never to mislead. Don't try never to say anything which is wrong, which isn't theosophy, which doesn't arise from the ageless wisdom. I don't know whether you've ever thought about it. Those of you who do lecture and teach. But invisibly, karma is at work from the moment you begin. And the effect of your teaching upon each member of the audience is involved in the karma. And if you mislead, you drive away someone who would have gone on with the study, or you lead a person to a wrong conduct of life and a wrong application of the wisdom, then you've not only done grave harm by misleading, but you've generated some very adverse karma for the lodge and for yourself. I often ponder the karma of a theosophical lecturer. And therefore, watch very carefully never to repel. Whether the people come and believe and go along with you or not, don't drive them away. Don't repel them. For instance, don't attack other organizations, particularly Orthodox religion. One of our lodges, very big and the richest in the world it is, has many certain speakers who just state that the Bible isn't true at all and the gospel story has no foundation and that the whole thing is a myth and should never be given any attention, and tear down the religious beliefs of those in the audience without being able to replace them with anything better. Mistake. Don't attack the medical profession. Unfortunately, that is done. Don't insist upon vegetarianism as being the only right way of life. Don't insist upon vegetarianism and teetotalism before you can join the society, or any other isms at all. Just teach the ageless wisdom and leave the people to apply it in their own way. Then you only generate favorable karma for the TS, for the lodge, and if it matters, for yourself. Next amongst these ideas, and of course I could go on a long time, but I'm going to stop very shortly. Try to be a translucent channel for theosophy, with your own personality reduced to a minimum. Teach the ageless wisdom, not your own gropings. There's more than you can grasp available, more than you could teach in half a dozen lives or more, freely available. Teach it, not your own meanderings of mind. Grope and meander by all means. That's the way to one way towards wisdom. But when you're on the platform, be a translucent, as far as possible, egoless channel for theosophy, with your own personality reduced to a minimum, and the first person pronoun singular, I, not present, or at least only when really necessary. And many more, but watch other people and learn from them. Everyone you meet has a message for you. Watch their reactions and learn humbly from them. Collect ideas, relevant news, for example. Have files of the theosophical subjects, and then watch the newspapers and have others do it for you, and your books, and never read quite idly. Don't miss something which illustrates and perhaps strengthens a doctrine. Put it in its appropriate file and refer to it. Gives your lectures a topical tone. Lastly, develop the capacity to think as you talk. Pause if you like in order to do so. Reflective pauses give the audience time to absorb and you to receive and clarify added thoughts. And thus you really come into touch with the audience and help them. And finally, remember what they used to say in Rome of old. They used to say, when Cicero speaks, they would say, "What a splendid speech." But when Demosthenes speaks, they say, "Let us march."